Buttery, rich and buttery.
Ooh, buttery. I like that. I like buttery.
Right? Velvety. Velvety? Huh? Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 31 of It's Just Bodybuilding. I'm here with Dusty Hanshaw. Of course, I'm Ron Partlow. And on today's guest, Coach's Corner and the end of the world on It's Just Bodybuilding.
It is the end of the world, Ron.
I'm sitting here waiting for Trudeau to make the announcement. I think he's going to close all non-essential businesses. So I'm just kind of like not quite sure what's going to happen in the next couple hours here.
How the fuck do you call a gym non-essential? There's going to be riots in the street.
It's healthcare. Okay, so as we kick this off, remember to subscribe, share, like, comment, all that stuff. Helps us out a bunch. Of course, it is Corona crazy.
I
hate that we are going to talk about this because it just kind of has to be talked about, even though everyone's like, talk about something else. And it's going to come out on Wednesday.
You can't ignore it.
Yeah.
At this point, because by Wednesday, I'm going to be fucking fuming, but it's fine.
Yeah. So, like I said, you know, just sitting here, I can kind of hear Emily's in the other room listening to the Prime Minister of Canada make an announcement. So I'm expecting by the end of this show, I'm going to turn my phone back on and it's going to be all the boys saying, hey, I guess we're closed. You know, that's what I'm expecting, but we'll see what happens. It would be nice to be able to stay open. We made a post about no drop-ins and no new members for the time being.
Right.
Just kind of, you know, minimize the community influx and just do what we can, but you know, I'm not sure if that's going to be considered enough for, you know, the government, and they might want to shut everybody down, which is just kind of fucking like 3 weeks ago, if someone would have told you that the government might be forcing everyone to close, would you think they were fucking crazy?
I would, and I also still think they're fucking crazy. Because here's the deal, and I know we can't go on this rant, but here's what's going to happen. This will all end. Many businesses are going to go under. People are I have a client that just emailed. He just lost both of his jobs within 12 hours because places are getting shut down. I got another client that owns a small business in Washington that they're a restaurant. They can only do takeout now. Well, that doesn't fucking work. And so what's going to happen is when this thing fizzles out at way less than the, the N1H1 or whatever the fuck it was, the government will then be able to say, see, we saved you.
Right.
No, you fucked us. Because I was doing homework last night because, well, I don't sleep. And that's what normal people do when they sleep. They start researching shit. Right. Right. Here's what baffles my fucking brain, Ron. Okay, H1N1. Now, granted, this is a year's number, so I want to be straight with you. But would you like to know how many deaths were from that, from 2009 to 10?
Is this American or worldwide?
This is just American. 12,469. Yeah. Okay, now, understand, it's been a couple weeks here in the States, so the numbers are pretty close. Like, currently, we have 61 deaths.
Right.
Okay. Mathematically, do the math. A year from now, it has to be 240 a week to catch that number.
Now, right.
The bottom line is it's fucking not going to happen. And I don't want it to happen. But the problem is here, now you got people being hysteria, buying shit they don't need. You know, the grocery stores are fucked. Thank God there's an expensive grocery store by me that people ain't fucking with.
Right.
So my $8 a pound chicken is safe. And that's literally, hey, dipshit, no, the fucking dog with the wires. I feel like you remember Mallrats? That goddamn kid on the escalator.
Yeah.
Anyways, I digress. Yeah, so no, I'm just heated in general about the whole thing. And it's not downplaying what it is, but I'm telling you, the damage that we are doing with these moves is going to be stronger than the damage that the outbreak was going to do.
I understand. I think that you know, with everything, there is a cost benefit ratio. Mm-hmm. And you have to reckon, you know, you have to recognize that sometimes it's actually the other way. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? The economic impact of this is fucking, it's going to be unbelievable. Hopefully if things are shut down, it's like 14 days or less.
Yeah.
You know, but can you imagine if it went a month, how many businesses is there? And, you know, even though the government said, oh, there'll be economic relief for businesses, how long does it take to get that money? A year? 2 years? Plus,
and what about the employees?
Does your landlord give a fuck? Like, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, for sure.
How's it going to work? They're going to make the landlord like stay?
How about this? And I know you know this, but it's like I had someone that I knew was like, well, I'm just, this was, you know, 4 or 5 days ago. I'm just glad that I'm not at a point in life where I'm investing in stocks and things like that. So I didn't take the hit. I go, you're a bartender at a sports bar and there's no sports. You're getting your dick kicked in, kid. You just don't know it yet.
Yeah. You're going to have the worst 3 months of your life coming up here.
Yeah. No one's coming in to buy your overpriced alcohol without sports.
Yeah.
You know what yeah, I mean?
They're putting, you know, they got to put WrestleMania 3 up on the TV to get people to fucking.
Yeah. Well, and plus people aren't, you know, and the people who are in there spending the money don't have as much. You know, I mean, I know for a fact I'm going to take a hit just because clients aren't going to be able to afford me. You yeah, know, I mean, no, thankfully sure. I'm well, at an excess, so it's okay. But I mean, I got a couple clients. It's like, you know, we're going to have to work something out because we need to keep moving forward on their progression and figure out what we're going to do financially. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I've got people up here that are concerned that their show is not going to go forward, you know, when they're 2 weeks out.
Yeah, well, that's happening all over the place right now. Thankfully, Canada, I saw, just made one happen, which is great because in the U.S., the last week, all of them have been gone.
Yeah, they've been doing the shows with a maximum of 250 people in the venue. So you get, like, some spectators, but, well, you know, with this, with the volunteers and everything and the judges and the competitors and stuff, it's pretty much, you know, 250 people, right? So they're that's kind of what they're doing for the shows that are coming up. But, I mean, who knows what's going on right now on this speech. It might, you know, Trudeau might be just wiping everything out.
Well, hats off to the promoters for doing that too, man. I mean, competitors get confused that the people who come to watch are the money.
Oh, the promoters are taking a big hit, man. They're going to be like, if they can keep the sport alive through this, I mean, that's going to be like, you know, hero stuff. I mean, it's going to take
effort. I mean, for these guys to choose to say, okay, you know, we're going to take a hit and keep the show going. Well, guess what? The venue's not lowering their price.
Yeah. No, it's going to take a lot. I mean, you know, like Good Life, giant chain here in Canada.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, I mean, their average location has, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 members in most cities. You know, they just said they're closing nationwide. And they're suspending memberships and paying their staff.
Yeah, that's impressive.
So, but that's, just think, small businesses can't do that.
No, fuck no.
Like a giant corporation that has, you know, several hundred million dollars in assets and liquidity and credit with a bank can do that. But like Ma and Pa corner store, like.
Do they got to pay their own bills?
Yeah,
their own
and
house.
Then, yeah, and then you got you know, the government saying, oh, we're going to help you with that, but how long does it take for that money to come back to them? Like, let's say they do pay their staff and all that stuff.
Yeah,
are they in debt now for like a year waiting for the money to come back to them from the government? Like, how's it going to work? You know,
yeah.
And then is there going to be all these stipulations at the end? Like, oh, well, you didn't qualify because, you know, this and that and the other thing, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, when the government says they're going to help you, I'm very skeptical. That's my main concern is, like, you know, whenever government says promises anything to me, I just instantly just see and hear liars and
hands up,
fine print and bullshit and red tape and bureaucracy. And so, you know, I don't really find much comfort in the promise to help businesses to, you know, recoup if this is a, you know, a massive hit. And then there was also some talk about mortgages and leases, like the government just having all the mortgage companies and all the banks just suspend mortgages and leases for like a month or something.
Right.
But I haven't, they haven't like, you know, really said much more about it. So
yeah, and that's a tricky spot too, though, because if you own the mortgage company, you're like, wait, so I'm paying for that? like yeah, I'll be honest with you, if I'm a multi-billionaire that owns this giant mortgage company, I'm still gonna be like, whoa, what the fuck?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why am I paying for this?
Yeah.
I
I think maybe the government would then, you know, be in
they'll subsidize or something.
And all that stuff. Yeah. But exactly, it just gets messy and it's hard to trust, you know. But the good news is we gotta talk about some of the good stuff too, buddy. The good news is the vibe at the gym has been awesome.
Right.
Everyone's been like wiping down all their stuff and wiping down their handles and, you know, polishing their knobs, you know. Got to polish your knobs. So everyone's in there taking care of the stuff. I even see people like wiping the bars down. And right. I even saw like people wiping their plates, like we put their plates away and like wipe their plates. And I know that a lot of it is helpful. And then some of it's probably not that helpful because everyone's just touching everything anyways.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of sort of feels like everyone's kind of coming together, which is always a good thing, you know, like a little bit of community spirit kind of down at the gym, which, you know, you already have plenty of that. So it's like noticeable when it gets even more so.
Right.
And, you know, everyone kind of laughing and trying to stay in good spirits and like bumping elbows and, you know, just like all that stuff. It's been pretty good down there and people are real happy that it's open. And, maybe not, depending on what's going
on. Open currently.
Open as of my brain 20 minutes ago. You know, the fact that it's open, you can see, and this is probably the most satisfying part of being involved in owning a gym. Mm-hmm. You can see how much it means to people that it's fucking open.
Right.
Yeah. Like it's their favorite part of the day anyways. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden their day's way more stressed and way more hectic and way more full of worry. And yet the anchor's still there. Right. And, you know, I guess that's how I felt all my life about the gym. So that's why it's satisfying to see, you know, when other people react like that, you know, it's pretty cool. So, you know, be really unfortunate to have to, for most people to have to stay home and do push-ups and try to find a chin-up bar in a park.
That's why I wish though, truthfully, that there was, I mean, we're all, And I understand the argument against what I'm about to say, which is the whole, well, if I'm an asshole, I get infected when I'm 25 years old, and then I go hang out at an old folks' home and kill some people, essentially. I get that. So I'm not downplaying that at all. But I do think at some point, what I notice is in all of these countries, no one really caught on to the fact that the government now controls everything. Right. That scares the shit out of me. When all of a sudden the government's deciding who can do what in all of the countries, you know, we're free. You're not allowed to do this. We're not free.
I completely share your horrendous skepticism towards the government and their constant desire to expand like a living organism.
Right.
And that's a huge concern of mine. You know, that's why I hate, you know, like I could rant about, you know, communism and there's so many things I hate about the government being involved in your life. But, you know, I always kind of like keep a lot of, you know, you don't want to sound like, you know, when you're talking about something and someone's agreeing with you and you're like, oh, this guy and I have this. And then you realize then they go way too far and you're like, oh, shit, he's like a conspiracy nut.
Yeah, yeah. No, I wasn't suggesting that this was created to cause this massive tailspin in the world.
Yeah,
it's like, I know what you mean. Sometimes
yeah,
you're like, ooh.
Yeah,
and he walks away and he goes, Ron's just like me.
Yeah, yeah. It's like fun. It's just like, you know, that joke about when you meet a guy at a bar and like three drinks in, you realize he's like a really hardcore racist. And you're like, oh, fuck, I've had three drinks with this dude.
We are not friends. Oh, shit.
So anyways, yeah, it's like, you know, the skepticism I have towards the government. Also then, you know, on the other hand, I'll call my brother. And for those of you who know, my brother is an infectious disease specialist. Yeah. So he's a brilliant doctor. And so I call him and I hear him talk about it. And the way he talks about his involvement, because he's on all these committees and shit, right? So the BC, you know, the health minister actually listens to this, to them, and then, you know, sometimes ignores them for political reasons and sometimes listens to them. Well, and as they do with all their sort of, you know, people giving them information. But, you know, listen to him talk about it, and you realize that the people in government aren't, like, here's the thing. People think that politicians are evil.
Right.
I don't think many of them are. I think there might be a higher percentage of bad people than in the general population because they're pulled towards the power.
Right.
But a lot of politicians, that's just an impossible job.
Well, yeah, they're fucked either way in this situation. It's, if a bunch of people died and they did nothing.
There's so many jokes about, you know, Joe Rogan has that joke about the president, and he's like, the president's a job that no one should want. it's a fucked up job. The reason it's so hard to find someone really good to do it is because it's a job you don't want. Like, unbelievable pressure and stress and brutal decisions where there's no win. Like, do we bomb this place and kill these innocent people, or not bomb it and allow this guy to bomb this place and kill innocent people?
Yeah. Well, that's what's happening here. You know, I mean, if they chose to just turn a blind eye, then all of these people would be saying, look at all the people we could have saved but didn't.
Yeah.
Because you can't see it all the way through. And I think at the end of the day, you know, back to a Gary Vee thing that you'd understand, you pick a direction and you go.
Yeah.
We will never know what would have happened if we went the other way. And even if this appears to be terrible, you don't know if it's worse than what it would have been.
Yeah.
So you just got to say, fuck it. This is what's happening. This is real. And roll. And hopefully, you know, I mean, I hate to say this, but as a business person, what sucks is it becomes survival of the fittest at some point.
Yeah.
And you get weeded out sometimes on purely bad luck. I mean, how about, I was laughing literally coming out of the grocery store this morning. I saw a new business up. And I'm like, oh, like,
what a month, right?
I know what happened when I opened my business. You're already in the red from all the money you put out. And even if you've got a loan and money, and then someone's like, oh, by the way, we're going to need you to close. Also, all the people who would have been spending money here when you open back up, they're not going to have any.
Yeah.
So
we need you to close for a month, and then everyone's going to be broke for 3 months.
Yeah. But you should be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No relationships with vendors or anything like that yet.
Yeah.
So good luck, you know? I mean, that blows.
I saw a really good video by a guy who was on, he was like a British guy, and he was on the committee that, like, the front line that dealt with Ebola.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying how, you know, they've had these recommendations put forward to all these governments for a long, long time. And they're just slow to react because they don't want to piss off people. But he said the number one thing, like the number one fastest first thing you do when you have an outbreak, shut down all flights everywhere, fucking period.
Right.
He said, if we could just all fucking get on board with that and understand that, we could, that is the ultimate defense against the worst type of disease.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're afraid to disrupt travel because it'll inconvenience people, and he said that is the hugest fucking cost. He said, right, with a disease like Ebola, there's, if you can, if you fucked around and left airports open, you know, you get millions dead with a disease like Ebola if you don't shut down airports. And the lucky thing about a disease like Ebola is that you die so quickly that it's not like you have 2 weeks to walk around and infect people.
Right, yeah.
You get it.
This, like, one could fuck you.
Yeah, like within a day you're dead, right? So it's like, you know, you're symptomatic within probably minutes of getting it or hours of getting it.
Right.
And, you know, so it sort of reduces the spread. It's not like this, which was just so benign.
Yeah.
But he said,
now, not now.
Yeah, because it's still shutting airports. You got to do it.
Yeah, no, I think the biggest thing that I would like to push before we move back into our normal line, too, is something I remind myself when I'm getting on my high horse is all the people who are making these decisions, I'm not sitting here in my living room in Scottsdale and thinking of something they haven't thought of.
Yeah.
They're smarter than you. Yeah, they've got a better understanding of every facet. We look in our little tunnel and what affects Dusty, and I say, this is fucking crazy because I can't get chicken, and that matters to me.
Yeah. That's
you know what I'm saying? Like, when you look bigger, you look out, and it's like, look, Dusty, you're really not that fucking smart.
Yeah.
Trust me, they've all thought of this 10,000 times plus 100 steps, and they still figured out that maybe your way is not the right way.
Yeah, that's what this guy meant. He was saying his main point was that if you shut down the airports and the flights, life can still continue in the country.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if they just shut down all the flights, the gyms can still stay open. Everyone can still just drive around, because if it's not in your country yet, you're just like locked in for a couple of weeks, but you're locked in and you're all functioning.
Yeah, it's nothing.
And there's less total damage because, you know, you disrupt a bunch of people that are traveling, but you don't disrupt the entire fucking economy.
Right.
You know, and I'll take the hit. I'll stay in a hotel in fucking Boise, Idaho for a week if I had to.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, that's it, man. It's going to be a rough week. So we're kind of, we're in. So where do you train if everything closes?
I've got a couple friends that own gyms. So yeah. I imagine I will key it up and cover some windows and rock it in there by myself.
Right in Scottsdale?
Close by. Yeah. I mean, one's in Tempe.
Okay.
So it's key card activated. So I'm sure I'll need an actual key because he'll have to shut down the key card system.
Yeah. Yeah. You could get him to pay you $15 an hour to be a janitor.
You know, so I just go in there and it's a cool thing. I mean, I'm really fortunate because, I mean, truthfully, and you know how this is, I already have my food. I've had it for, because I eat the way I eat. So it didn't, you know, unless this drags on for a month and shit just stops coming in, I mean, the only change I did is I bought some stuff a little bit differently. I was like, I'll pick up some salmon because it's here. And in case I run out of my red meat, I have some fatty food. You know what I mean? Right, I didn't go nuts. I bought, you know, 3 whole slabs of salmon. I don't know what that is, 7 pounds.
Do you have any canned tuna?
Hell no. Shit's gone.
I'm still too rich for canned tuna.
What's funny is if I wanted to, it was none there.
Right. Yeah. That went quick. Yeah, that went quick. Yeah,
that was quick. But no, I mean, that's a thing. You know, here's the deal. What happens in the next 2 weeks for everybody decides your fate. So you can sit back and cry or you just start grinding. And that's business and that's life.
Yeah.
You know, if I couldn't get into a gym, I'd say, okay, let's work on flexibility. Let's get my cardio up. I'm going to bring my food down, which food's not as accessible possibly anyways. So since I've got a show coming, I think I'll start heading down without.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Figure it the fuck out. I told 2 clients, I was like, perfect, cruise right now. You need to focus on your business anyways. Get out of the gym. Do some cardio in the streets. All good. And then we'll find out in 2 weeks if you're back in.
Yeah.
Because I imagine we're going to know in 10 days what's happening at the end of 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
And then as you get the facts, you deal with them. I think what's brutal is I'm watching people panic before something's happening. Like here, there's a lot of stress. Like, we're going to close the bars and this and that. And if you look at what's going on in my state, they shouldn't.
Right.
But they might. But there's nothing worrying about it will help. So wait until you get that fucking phone call, you know?
There's a bunch of memes now about, you know, like I'm a Gen Xer. So I say that one Gen Xer meme.
Yeah, yeah.
I like the millennials and they're like freaking out, and then the boomers and they're freaking out. And then the Gen Xers are just, there's that picture of the dude sitting in the hot tub with the roach. just, yeah, I'm used to, I could do nothing. We had our slacker
phase.
I've
done this before.
Yeah. You know.
Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com and use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
So, listen, I got a lot of, I got some good stuff nice, that we man. Could hit. You know what That's I mean? Fucking... Make this an entertaining show in light of the situation. So, first question. Do you have any? You have any questions at all?
I have questions. I'm just I'm scanning them to see if I've got a bunch that I would like. So you get rolling.
And first question: what is your favorite end of the world movie? Ooh. And what are some good ones? What are some great end of the world movies that people should see? And what are your favorites?
I mean, it is a good time to start really jamming those out, right? Well, I mean, I think at this point you got to go with the obvious, right? Like Outbreak.
And oh, okay. Yeah. So you're going
you know, like,
you're
let's going go right to the fucking, let's go to the jugular here with this. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I think that that's key.
Wasn't Outbreak kind of loosely based on like worst case scenario Ebola? I can't remember. Is that the Matt Damon one?
No, God, I can't even remember. No, the Matt Damon one, which is what I'm trying to find right now as I'm not looking at you. I'm trying to remember what her.
I think Outbreak had Dustin Hoffman in it. And yeah, had Dustin Hoffman in it. That's a, like a really good older movie.
All right, there we go. And so I'm hunting. Keep talking.
And they pick up that virus from the jungle, right?
Yes, that's
a great movie. That was kind of inspired by the Ebola incident, and they sort of like wrote like what would have happened if it would have got worse.
If it went sideways.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. You know what? Another. Well, sorry, I don't want to interrupt you. You got to go. You got to
keep going.
Name another one.
No, that's the one I have in the top of my head. I'm trying to find this. Oh, there it is. Perfect.
Outbreak's great.
Okay, there was one I'm looking at here.
That so you're looking virus movie.
Yeah, no, because this is what Contagion.
Oh, yeah, that's the Matt Damon one, right?
Yes. See, now that's another one that I think that somebody's going to be racking in some money because us sick fucks are renting that shit this weekend.
So I have a favorite virus movie.
Yes.
And everyone misses it because I've actually seen this topic come up before. Fucking 12 Monkeys.
Oh, God.
It is so fucking awesome. People who haven't seen it or haven't watched it for a long time, man, everyone should watch it.
Right?
Brad fucking Pitt.
Right.
Smashing a home run of a crazy awesome role. And Bruce Willis.
Come on. So it's a Christmas movie.
Yeah. It's, it's fucking awesome. But I've seen 12 Monkeys like 10 times. I think it's just great because it's a mind twister because there's like some time travel in it.
Right.
And some real fucked up shit. So
I can't even remember that movie. Like now, you got me. I'm going to rent that one.
Oh, you guys, 12 Monkeys again, man. I'm watching
it. You're going to see it on my story. It's going to go up today. Dink. This is what I'm doing right now.
I'm going to make Emily watch it with me because I'm not sure she remembers it very, very well. It's a complicated movie. Yeah.
I couldn't even like get you into that movie. You said, all right, I'll give you $1,000 to describe it. I'd be like, fuck.
Yeah. No, it's good. 12 Monkeys, man. Now, what about other end of the world stuff?
God, I mean, nothing. I mean, it's terrible. With nothing's jumping at me. We had
the asteroid movies. Remember, we had Armageddon and Deep Impact.
What was the? But see, I'm trying to remember which ones too that are like just you. We like to make just U.S. ending movies as well over here for some reason. Right.
Oh yeah,
we're fucking arrogant. It has nothing to do with anybody else.
Well, how about The Road?
I don't even know what The Road is.
Didn't see The Road. No. That was good. That's Viggo Mortensen, right? Great actor. And it's in like a post-apocalyptic U.S. and he's trying to get to the East Coast with his son.
Right.
And they're like, it's literally like society has fucking collapsed. Like they're walking, they're just like walking down the highway, no one in sight. And if you see, and if you see people, you actually don't want to wave them down because they'll probably kill you and take your shit.
Whatever you have, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like a real grim future, futuristic sort of survival movie. And it's Viggo Mortensen, I believe. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure Viggo. And, you know, the guy from Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
You know, yeah, anyways.
I've also never seen.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's him, unless I'm just mistaking him with someone else. But great movie. That's recommended. Kind of grim, though.
Well, we need some grim in our life right now, Ron.
You know, there isn't like an amusement park on the East Coast.
No one jumped in at the end and just hit up the amusement park, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, give me another question, man. I like these ones. You're on fire.
Okay. Damn. Oh, well, does the coronavirus crush the online dating game for a while? I don't online date. I imagine it'll probably, or maybe the Tinder just goes nuts because people aren't really afraid of other clean looking people. Maybe everyone's stuck at home. So they're like, fuck, just Tinder. Maybe it just blows up.
Check this out, though. I got this meme that actually did perfectly lined up with this. Somebody says, me, I think I'm ready to date again. Universe. Oh, yeah. Releases worldwide virus, preventing all human interaction. Me. Well played. There it is.
I think I'm ready to date again.
Well, you don't want to touch anybody.
Here's one. Here's a question. Let's do a gear question.
Okay.
But sure. It's actually a sex question.
Ooh. Wow.
So I've got this from a lot of people in various worded ways. But this guy just says, what's the deal with the sexual side effects of Tren? So now take that question in, process it, and give me what you think.
I'll be honest with you, I don't take anything that gives me a negative sexual side effect. So
yeah.
My negative of sexual side effect of Tren is you can just keep going.
So here's what I think that means. I think it means that he's one of these guys that's taken way too much Tren and he's getting that progesterone feedback thing going on. And it's actually causing like the same problem as Deca.
Ah, so now he's trying to fold it in. That doesn't work.
You know, he's taking so much Tren that he's getting the fucking dick issue.
There's no, dude, if you're taking more than 300 milligrams of Tren, you're out of control.
There you go. Like,
trust me, if you're on 300 milligrams of Tren and fuck 500-600 tests, the only thing you're going to have to do is apologize. And sometimes she might tap out. Like, fuck you, I'm done. That might happen. If you're early in a relationship, you're an all-star. That's good. About 3 years in, she's like, bro, enough.
I'm done. I think every time, so my general reaction every time someone says they're having a sexual side effect while on something, negative sexual side effect, not a positive. I was gonna say,
'cause I'm over here high-fiving on this one. Like,
yeah.
Can't wait to get back.
It usually tells me they're taking too much.
Right.
There's a feedback loop that's going off. I'm not a chemist.
Except for DECA and NPP. Those two, I would, I tried NPP because someone said to. I'm like, what are you, are you crazy?
Right. Okay. Yeah, the nandrolones don't do me any favors.
Yeah.
But I always have that one. I'll get gyno on nandrolone. So that's why I don't
think it's your fucking man card folding away. Building up gyno because shit ain't working. She left. You're fucked.
Yeah, I just avoided them. I avoided them. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's done. So,
yeah, for sure. Take less of it and the side effects will probably go away. How's that?
Or they'll become positive side effects.
Or they'll become positives. Yeah.
Bet she's on 500 or more. Go ahead.
Okay, you go. What do you got?
Okay, shit. See, I closed this because I said go ahead. Right, here it is. Here it is. I got plenty here. Oh, and now they're closed. God. Mother, you know, I need to start doing that move you do.
The never lock out thing on the phone. It's great. Very helpful. Dusty has really frozen. It's like totally still. Oh, lost you.
I'm moving.
I lost you there, dude.
I'm gone.
A few seconds. I got you back now.
The show would be better if I wasn't
visible.
Anyways, yes. Yes.
Okay, I got one here. Okay. Your phone unlocked or not?
Yeah, we're good. I'm ready now, but go ahead.
If you could send a letter to your younger self, what would the general gist of it be? That's from Zach Henley 1.
On anything? Holy shit. That's awesome. I mean, all right, here we go. I'm going to do it's all serious, but part of it's like extra serious. The extra serious would be 150% honest in every single thing you do. Is life changing. Like even things that you think like, ooh, they don't want to fucking know that. I definitely learned now being old. They're like, I say some shit now that's just fucking brutal. And people are like, oh, okay. Whereas in the past,
they respect you more.
I just think, you know, kind of like Evan said, you cut the shit because you're going to get there anyways. So if you just get there right away, it's better. You know, because what ends up happening is, you know, in typical, like, if this is a friendship or, dude, I have a hard time getting rid of training partners sometimes when they suck. Right. I'm like, oh, I don't break this guy's heart. I mean, I'm fucking awesome and he's got to go. No, but seriously, so you end up literally dragging it out. Whereas if you literally just, it's a fucking dude. Hey, this isn't beneficial to what I do anymore for me. So I gotta go. Right. You know what I mean? I don't think anyone that I'm friends with, maybe worst case scenario, they go, oh shit, maybe I should get my shit together and fix this. Other than that, no issue. So that would be the big, like, dead serious thing. But the other thing I'd say is, aside from death and things like that, I found that every fucking catastrophic event in my life wasn't really that fucking bad. Like, when you're done and you're through it, it's like a prep, right? You ever done a prep where you're dying the entire prep? Then you get done, you have a cheeseburger, you look back, you go, that wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Bitch, you were dying for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, but once it's over, wasn't that bad. You know what I mean? Yeah. I really think that's a lot of things in life, and I've had a really fucked up life with some crazy shit, and you're still fine when it's done, you know?
Right.
So what's yours? Let's go.
I wouldn't give that fucking crazy bitch $38,000.
That's a true one.
No, I was just seeing if you remembered the story.
Anybody who just laughed is a true fan of the show.
No, but he said younger self, and I did that when I was in my 30s already. So if I was writing a letter to my younger self, you know, I don't know. It's funny, man. I've really enjoyed the ride.
Right.
Yeah, I had like a fun ride to get to where I am now.
Had. Sounds like we're dead.
I'm just talking about the younger self, you know? Like I had a pretty good experience, you know. I didn't make a lot of bad decisions, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I don't mean I didn't make bad decisions like financially and all socially and everything, but I just mean like the really bad ones.
Oh yeah,
that for sure. Cost people just too much time and stuff. So, geez, I'd probably tell my younger self to start investing money earlier.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And invest double. Like, I remember when I started putting $100 a month into a mutual fund.
Right.
When I was young, I could have done 200.
Easily.
Easily could have done 200.
Easily. Isn't it funny when you look back and you're like,
to think of the math on that.
Oh, for sure.
Compound interest over the last 25, 30 years.
18 years old, yeah.
Yeah. I would have more than double.
Yeah, no, I would definitely, I can't say this about talking to yourself, but if I had a kid, it wouldn't be optional. I'd be grinding that shit in their head at 6.
Yeah,
we'd be doing that with we'd be investing into the piggy bank with their chore money allowance, just so they understood you pay yourself first, then you go buy groceries, then you fuck off. You know what I mean? No, that's true. That's actually a great one, man. And
you know,
I don't know people that can't say that other than Aceto.
And then when I, and then, you know, and then when I got a little older and I went to 200 a month.
Yeah, could have been four.
I could have done three or four.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then when I got to where it was 500 a month, probably could have done six or seven.
Do you remember when you, and I don't know if you had this situation, but so when I first started making penny money, you know, little bumps are like life-changing when you don't make any money. Mm-hmm. Like I remember when I made 30,000 and I went up to 36,000 in a chunk, and it was like bawling out of my mind. I just remember seeing the checks and I was like, holy shit. You know what I mean? And then once you're making six figures, there's not a lot like here, and I'm just creating numbers, people, so relax, but there's nothing you can do with 100,000 you can't do with 110, or vice versa, I should say. 110,000 you can't do with 100. Like, it doesn't change your life to make an extra 10 grand at that point. You have more money, but it's not life-changing.
Well, there's very, very good stats worldwide, cross-cultural, that show that whatever the standard of living, like if you use a North American standard of living for $68,000 to $72,000 a year.
Yep.
Of course, you know, from state to state, that's going to mean something different, but it's an average. You make more than that, you do not get happier.
Right.
Because your needs are taken care of. If you're making 70 grand a year, you got a place to live. You can eat whatever you want.
Yeah.
Want a bowl of cereal? You can have a fucking bowl of cereal.
Right.
Just think of the average person, right?
Yeah.
They can go to the movies. They can have Netflix. They got internet. They got a car. They might have a pet. Like, they're pretty happy. The happiness index from 70 grand to 100 grand barely fucking moves. And then from 100 grand to 500 grand doesn't move at all.
which I totally get.
It makes no difference to human beings' happiness whether they make 70 grand or 500 grand. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's nuts. But I get it totally.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we have to keep that in mind. And you know, anyone who's in that zone, really fucking realize where you're at, especially in a time time like now, you know? Yeah. Like, it's something to think about. And yeah, it's funny what you said, you know, that if you're making 100 grand a year, do you really need to buy those two more stupid fucking $5,000 things? Or should you just put that in the bank? Because one day, just like you said to your buddy that lost two jobs, one day that 100 grand income
is gone. Yep.
It might be gone. And instead of having 80 grand in mutual funds, you've got 800 grand in mutual funds.
Right.
And even if those mutual funds take a 50% hit on the crashing stock market, you still got 400,000.
Yeah. Instead of 40, 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's goes all the way down to just basic life, though. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it is nice when you're in a position because of how you choose to live to, like, this is all going down and I'm going to lose, you know, thousands of dollars a month, probably. Okay. I mean, literally nothing will change. You know, and then, you know, in some cases, like I said, we'll work it out with the people that are grinders. I'm not letting a client go because they can't give me their payment. We'll figure it out. Yeah. You know, but yeah, no, it is cool. I think, you know, one of the an advice piece that I was given that'll answer that question perfectly is every decision matters. That's what I was taught by like my first like real mentor that took me in. And you start to realize that, like, because every decision dominoes.
Yeah.
You know, and I've made so many bad ones. I know exactly how they domino. But it is true. You know what I mean? When you look back, like just dumb things you do, like you've avoided a lot of them. You know, you've never bought some $100,000 car because, you know what I mean? And that's one of those things where I think more and more people, especially depending where you live, it's an affluent area, very easy to fall into that. Like, oh, I need a BMW.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting, man. Well, that's a good question. Who was that again? I like this person. Good shit.
Damn. That was Zach Henley 1. Zach Henley 1.
Good call, Zach.
Get this question.
All right, here's one that I actually am interested in. When you see random people with incorrect form or bad technique, do you help them?
It depends. It depends. I mean, if anyone ever asks me for help, I fucking will always help them.
Yeah.
Or even if they hint that they might want help, they're like, "Yeah, this machine's a little funny to figure out," or something like that.
Yeah, that's your in.
that's my in. I will jump in and I will give them. I'll try to give them the 2-minute explanation.
Right.
I'll try not to like 10-minute them, but I'll hop in and I'll try to help the best I can. If I see someone who looks unsure, like they're kind of looking at the bar and they're doing a few reps and then moving the bar and doing a few reps, or anything to show that they're not confident.
Right.
I would be much more likely to go, "Hey, you need a hand with those?"
Right.
But if they seem confident, like they're putting the plates on and they're getting under there and they're quarter squatting.
Yeah.
And they're fucking, they got the stomp down and they got the chalk on their back and they're fucking ready to go.
Then no, I hear you.
I just let the dude do his thing, man. You know, unless, of course, you know, obviously I got that gym owner element now that wasn't there before.
And think about the guy getting hurt now or breaking something.
So now that's just, is it a liability?
Right.
You know, is it, could this guy, you know, because you also want to keep your members. You don't want them to tear rotator cuffs.
Yeah. If you're hurt, not only you're hurt, but you also can't pay me.
Yeah, I want the guy here training and buying shakes and loving the gym, you know? So if I see him doing something crazy, but if it's just like, there's a difference between dumb and dangerous.
Right.
So that would be, I guess, the line.
Yep, no, I agree. I agree with that. I think the only thing that there's one area where I jump in uninvited completely, and that is young guys who I know are working hard, like, and they want it.
Right.
And they're fucking up. But what I would do in that scenario is, I think a lot of guys visualize walking over, "What the fuck are you doing?" When in reality, it's more like, "Dude, you guys are getting after it. That's badass." And I'll even, you know, I'll usually just drop like a, "If you ever want some advice on how to make that a little more valuable to you, let me know." And then I walk away.
Right.
Like, you're all set because you're already working your ass off. I'm already actually impressed because you're getting after it.
And yeah.
If you're doing it the way you want to, cool. And sometimes you get nothing.
Sometimes,
where the fuck are you going? Well, get over here. Like, yeah, right now.
Sometimes there's a window where you can give some good advice and it's, you know, it's in like such an easy way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, there was these kids leg pressing the other day and they were leg pressing hard. They had 8 plates aside, right? And they're going hard and, you know, they're even spotting each other and stuff. Right. But they had their feet like right at the top. And the one kid said to me, he goes, "That's my personal best." And I go, "Oh, that's awesome that you guys are training progressive."
Yeah.
I said, "You know, maybe what you guys should give a try is, how many sets you got left?" And he goes, "Oh, we got one more left each." I go, "Why don't you take like half the plates off and put your feet right at the bottom and see if you can get 20. And they were like they hadn't thought of doing 20 reps if they wanted to train heavy, right?
Yeah.
And they were like, "Huh?" And I was like, "Yeah, just take half the plates off and do 20 with your feet low." And none of them got 20.
Yeah, of course not.
They all failed at like 12.
I was going to say, they weren't even close. 10. And they're working different muscles now.
Yeah. So, but then afterwards, they were like, "Fuck, that was hard." But yeah. I think like a little light went off in at least one of their heads.
Yeah, that's the key. I think that's the other thing is, you get one. You know, if there's 4 dudes in the gym and you get the one, you're good. He's the one that really wants it. Because I know that was me when I started. I just went in and trained, and I trained hard. And I trained everything, every time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, I was just the thing. Like, you went in, "What are you doing?" "I'm squatting, I'm deadlifting, I'm..." "What?" "Yeah, today." But yeah, no, it's, I do the same. And then the only other thing that I like to do that has nothing to do with really correcting form is when I see someone, for example, one time, this was actually awesome. I saw this lady. She had to have been 300 pounds at 5'2", okay. And she's on a step mill, and it's barely going, but she is on that thing for 20 fucking minutes. And I was doing my cardio, I was getting ready for a show, and she comes off, and we both look like death at this point. Her and I had the same workout, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I looked at her, and I was like, "You are badass." She's like, what? And I'm like, I totally feel your pain right now. And then we were like forever gym cardio buddies. You know what I mean? Because it was like, she was like, oh, someone like that respects what I'm doing.
Yeah.
At a different level. And she would just get in there and get after it all the time. And you slowly watch that level two became a level four. You know what I mean? And you kind of feel like, man, I might have had like a small piece of that, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's another thing that, you know, we're never really aware of the things we say to people and the impact it has. Like, there's people at my gym, well, not just at my gym, but like fucking all through all the gyms I've trained at, that have said stuff to me that like really made a huge fucking difference, and they don't realize it.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that day where you're stressed out or you're struggling or something, someone says like, oh man, fuck, you've been working really hard in here. Like, everyone knows you're going to win this show.
Right.
And they say something like that.
It's like in passing to them and you're like, oh.
And you're thinking to yourself, because you know how sometimes people don't say stuff to you. They say it to everyone else. And you're thinking, huh, that's funny. No one said anything to me about my show for like a month.
Right.
But to hear this person saying, yeah, where everyone says that, you know, this is it and blah, blah, you know, like, and it just gives you that like little boost. And you're like, holy fuck, I guess, you know, because let's face it, you know, not always the most approachable people, even though we're good guys.
That's things. When you're in there, you're doing that thing. But I think you're in a case too where people know. Like, I've been at the same gyms for so long, but it's so fortunate because, like, I literally feel like a large percentage of the entire gym has your back. You might not say a damn word to you, but you just know because they know, you know, or they'll walk by at the end and be like, getting close, huh? And then just keep going. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you have any like, you know, clients that you're trying to pull 100 pounds off or anything like that right now? Just, you froze for a second.
I had one guy. Yeah, I was able to just decipher your question, actually. So
Yeah.
I don't know what happened there. But I did have one guy. Once it's on my end, dude. It says poor network connection. Weird. Anyways, well, let me know if it fucks up. So, no, I had one guy that I worked with. I got him ready for the Olympia. He's a huge fan of Bobby. I met him at the Olympia. And, you know, just a typical like struggles of losing weight, just a heavy dude. And somehow, some way, man, we locked it in, got his mindset. He dropped like, God, I don't know, 50, 60 pounds in this prep period. And it was just like a night and day thing. But what I learned the hard way was undoing the mindset is difficult. So here's the deal. He fell off the map at the Olympia. I didn't see him. And they traveled across the country to get to the show. Then they did the show. Then they traveled home. And I didn't hear from him. So I reached out to him. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? You know, you got to send me pictures, blah, blah, blah. Want to see, you know, how the trip went. Long story short, he put it all back on.
Oh, really?
Like all of it in like 2 or 3 weeks. And I remember I was just like, what? Like, I wasn't ready. I couldn't even fathom it. So I asked him, I was like, hey, what happened? You know? And he goes, well, I like to, and this part I died because he emailed me. He said, I like to eat the food of the cultures I'm visiting. I'm like, you're in fucking Las Vegas. There is no culture. It's a buffet.
It's a completely manufactured culture.
And I was just, and it was, but point is, I'm not even teasing him. It was the realization that my mistake was, I don't think at the time I was younger, I wasn't teaching the mindset and the understanding of the lifestyle.
Right.
I was dieting somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and whether I meant to or not, I was getting him ready for the Olympia for a show.
Yeah.
In other words, there was a finish line.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a finish line.
Right.
He had a finish line. So yeah, that was brutal. I never got him back.
Yeah. You know,
fell off. He tried a couple more times and then the check.
Well, it's there's just a lot of, it's very, very difficult. I have a guy right now who's doing awesome. This guy named Cody. He contacted me at 400 pounds. And, So he's been down pretty far before. Like, I think he got down to like the low threes at one point. Mm-hmm. So I started helping him, and you know, it's trying to keep him fed, you know, trying to be more of macro replacements on, you know, make it more of a lifestyle doable thing. He's down over 30 pounds now. Nice. So, you know, we're on our way to 300. That's the mission. But yeah, that's the difference. That's a coaching lesson that, you know, it's not just about the result, because if you haven't really sort of ingrained the mentality and the lifestyle stuff into somebody, it's going to be very difficult. And this happens with coaches, really great prep coaches who just they don't do any off season stuff. Right. Yep. And then also that goes on the competitors too. That's heavily on the competitors, because they don't keep their coaches for off season. Okay. They're like, I just use it for the show and then I come to you. But it is harder that way, because you and I know that when you get somebody 20 weeks out, you don't really know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, so you start them on the diet, and it's really, you really got to read them early, because you got to find out, like, where's their metabolism at? You haven't been helping them or anything. So, and then it also, you know, because they haven't been checking in with a coach for the whole off season, maybe their training hasn't been that good.
Right.
So, so sometimes the accountability really keeps people easier to work with long term.
Well, I think it's also good for them, because beyond results, which obviously we all know, I tell guys straight up, like, look, for the investment you're spending for the off season, I'm going to make sure you're a different bodybuilder before your next show. You might not do that by yourself.
Right.
Your call, and I'll take you and I'll get you in shape again, but I really don't want to get the same body in shape again. So if we move on together, we're good. I just had a client who, longtime client, great client, went off to do their own thing for a little bit and then decided to come back, and had not taken a progress picture the entire time they were away. So when they took them, had the realization of, oh shit, this is much worse than I thought. Like, I was asked, do I have to send these pictures? And I said, yes. And the fact that you're saying that tells me it's really, really good we took them. Right. You know, because it is true. I mean, we have it's like they say, you know, we view ourselves as better looking than we are. Even those of us who like talk shit about ourselves, we still edge ourselves up more than is actually there.
Yeah.
It's definitely the same with the physique. That's why I love when a client will go, I'm telling you, it's much bigger in person. I'm like, it's a picture of you. Yes, funny. Lighting plays a role, but it ain't much better.
I understand, like, how you often say that you're a 5. And, I mean, all your friends know you're a 4.5, but we let you have...
Yeah, you give that. That's a gift.
We give that. It's sort of an understanding. It's like you're speaking a slang language, but we still know what you mean.
Oh, and the funny thing is, he thinks he's teasing himself, but he's actually bumping himself up. Arrogant prick.
And Dusty, the fact that you're a 5 makes your batting percentage even more impressive.
That's the thing is, I've got the wrong hand of the bat in my hand. You're supposed to hold the part I'm swinging. But
there you go.
Oh my God!
That's classic. Whose question is next?
All right, I've got one actually that I wanted to ask for you. Okay. So when you've lost size on your legs or your back, due to injury or whatever, where you've had it before, what's the fastest way to put that size back on in training? Frequency or weight? And I know that I know the answer, but go ahead.
Those are just semantical questions, because there's so many other factors. Like, do you mean like 3 sets of 20 every day, or just start training it normally? Or I don't know. It's hard to say what the question means. I would probably.
Just how did you approach? And I already know.
How
did when it came time to just train, and you were no longer worried about range of motion and shit, how did you approach? What is the fastest fucking way to get my legs back?
I just did my normal leg workout, and then I would do some extra single leg extensions, sort of more like with a lighter weight, obviously, and I do like my normal leg workout, and I try to practice, you know, my balance and staying straight and everything. And then I would do some extra work with the small leg on the extension and the curl, just to kind of like pump some more volume in. And then middle of the week, I would just do some non-failure single leg presses, like three sets of 20, four sets of 20, and just slowly put a little bit of weight on every set and just get it like pumping and moving.
Mm-hmm.
And that was more of like a neurological stimulation, getting things firing, not like hypertrophy work, but it technically is hypertrophy work.
Yeah.
It's freaking out. You know, grow from it. But yeah, that was how I rehab my leg. I had my normal workout that I just tried to really make sure it got better every week. And then I had like a midweek, just load that leg, get it moving. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think the big thing I would look at, to answer your question, man, is if your body is healthy and you're back to normal, number one, your body has already had muscle. It is easier to get.
I don't worry too much
about the magic formula. What, like Ron said, what put you there in the first place?
That's it.
There's your fucking standard. And then, like you said, some extra stuff on that one side. And some of that also is just activating the mind so your body remembers how to move that side so you can make sure you're not squatting 70-30 right to left.
Yeah.
But I think that's the big thing. Just get after it again.
If he's just talking about, like, I haven't trained chest for 3 months.
Yeah.
I would just say just start training chest again. It'll fill out. It's not like it's going to be behind the rest of your body, and it'll come back to where it was in like 5 workouts.
Yeah, no, it's really quick. I know, separate topic, but I'd love to get your piece on it anyway. So, and I always put this back to Ronnie Coleman, and in my belief on why he made huge strides was he had the discipline after the European tour to like not train for months.
Yeah, he was
famous for like 3 months and just let his body do whatever it did. And let's not forget he's not human, so it's not like he got small, but he definitely got soft. You know, he was smaller and fatter at the end of 3 months, but I swear, and I know people hate this because we're all so concerned about timelines, but I really think at a higher level, there's something to be said for that ability to actually help you shoot past what you would have done had you trained straight through. What do you think?
Dexter takes like 2 months off training every year, at least after the Olympia. Right. He always has. He doesn't train at all. Like just fat dad. Just fucking, you know what I mean? That's what I've always
like to think. Like I look at that as extreme discipline because I fucking love to train.
Yeah.
So it's hard to do that, but it's like, you know, what we say with our training and our eating is that we set it up based on the result we want. So the thing is nobody said that Ronnie doesn't love to train. He trains twice a day when he was in prep and during his whole off season when he was training. So I think it was a huge amount of discipline to say, cool, I'm going to take off.
Yeah, I think that probably with Ronnie, that probably kind of comes from football. Because athletes have the ability to do that. Like people who are really athlete minded, they play sports their whole life. Mm-hmm. They seem to have no problem with like a month out of the gym. Like when they become bodybuilders.
Right.
I find it actually, it's one of the things that frustrates me when I'm dealing with someone who's an ex-athlete because I've noticed it's like a thing. So it's like a guy will be like, oh yeah, I played hockey for 8 years or football for this many years or whatever. And then I'm like, huh, this guy just seems to fuck off and go fishing for 3 weeks at a time.
You and I are like, but where are you training and eating?
Yeah, but that's just because that's how most people are. And then there's like this, the weird ultra hardcore lifer bodybuilder just can't wrap our heads around it at all.
But what's crazy is even when you know. So, you know, I had before I hired Chris, I won the overall in 2008 at a show. And I had 3 hernias. When I won the show, I had 3 hernias. So I get those repaired. And back then, the recovery on those types of hernias was a bitch. I was out for like 2.5 months or something like that. And I had no discipline. I didn't eat anything. And when I did, I ate shit.
You're having like a massive bowl of cereal before bed.
It was just pizza. Garbage. Yeah. So before I went in, the biggest I'd ever been was 286.
Okay.
3 months back in the gym, I was a harder 294 than I ever was at 280 something. And I had started like 250 and fat.
Yeah.
But my body, like all the little aches and pains that I wasn't even thinking about, they were all gone.
I just remembered a little, like just a couple weeks ago, I remembered something that I had forgotten. And it was the very first prep I ever did for my show in 1997 for the Northern Albertas, I took the last 8 weeks of the year before, so that like November and December, right. I did not train at all because I had a shoulder that was fucking hurting, a knee that was hurting, and a bicep tendon that was hurting. Right. And it's because I was looking through my old notebooks a little while ago.
You essentially couldn't do anything, so you took some time off.
Yeah, and I finally was like, I have to take time off because if I'm going to compete, I have to be able to train. So I remember I started my prep January 2nd because I found the notebook.
Right here, I can show you.
And here's the thing I forgot. My very first show, I only did a 12-week prep. And it was a grow and diet at the same time prep.
You were doing this.
Yeah. And so I started 12 weeks out after having not trained for 8 weeks at all.
So your body also has to remember how to train.
Yeah. And it was just funny to me that I couldn't remember how that short of a prep. But I got in really good shape.
Tell me
because
about
the body just
put the muscle back on. I mean, were you as big as you think you could have been no matter what?
Yeah, so I actually looked, the diet was a 12-week prep, and the first 2 weeks were like high food.
Right.
So I started, how's this? I could
find it. You started dieting at 10 weeks.
No, so I started, I was 245 on day one.
Right.
2 weeks later, I was 265.
This is the worst diet ever.
I put on 20 pounds in the first 2 weeks, but I got like, I tidied up too.
Right.
Because I just hadn't been on anything for like months and months.
Yeah.
You know, that was back when I used to do like 6 months between cycles, right?
Right.
And so then it was really only 10 weeks of deficit.
Right.
And I went from 265 to 230.
So what did you say? You started at 245, 242?
245.
Yeah, so you lost 15 pounds of something.
I lost 15 pounds, so but I went up 20.
You probably lost 25 pounds or 30 pounds of fat. Because you put on 15 or 10 pounds of muscle while you're in prep.
Yeah, it was interesting.
And I was I love that, man. I think, and it's not for everybody. I don't think it's something I would never tell my clients, okay, now take 3 months off. Because I don't think that they're at that point where they're training and supplementing and eating in a way that they would bounce back like that. And even if they were, it's too much time gone from the work. But I think when you're older, and have the injuries and your body is just fucking tired, if you had the discipline, which I do not, it might be a good move to try. You know, I've talked about it all the time. I mean, if I make it out 10 days, I'm like, yay, good job. I remember when I worked with Chris 1 year, I told him, I said, yeah, I'm going to take like 3 weeks off and then we'll get back to it. And he's like, okay. And because I was like, I want to be fresh and drop the cortisol. So at like 10 days, I was like, dude, I'm going crazy. Chris goes, well, then the cortisol's fucked. Let's get back to work. It was true. It was like, it's so crisp. It's so black and white, but so accurate. You're defeating the entire purpose because you're stressed about not going to the gym.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just get back to it.
Yep. I totally agree.
You got one? Any more golden ones or what do we got here?
So I do have a few. This is a buddy of mine, Yorko Performance. He's self-isolating. Well, he's self-isolating because he just got back from a trip, so he's got to stay home.
Right.
What do you recommend to people who have to self-isolate but want to get in some kind of training? And what would you say? Like, let's say you're a normal dude who just loves to train and you don't have the hookups we have and you don't have a key to your own fucking gym and your fucking LA Fitness down the street is closed and you take public transport. That's fucking done. Like, what do you do?
Does he have access to anything?
Oh, well, he does, but he just, I'm just saying like,
I mean, if a general person, if somebody had access to just some basic stuff, and I'm not even talking about heavy enough, you know, 50 pound dumbbells, you know, and a barbell with say 225, I would say you can absolutely get it done. If you just run yourself through, here's the thing I think people forget about is heavy is relative. Meaning if I only have 50s, I can make a 50 pound dumbbell heavy for chest.
Yeah.
Once I pre-exhaust the shit out of it or superset or giant set or whatever it is, you know, but you won't find me pressing until the very end. And it's going to be a press with a 6 count negative and a 2 count pause at the stretch. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? find a way to make it hard. Yeah, I mean, literally, it's like, you're okay, how can I kill myself with these devices?
Yeah. I think, you know, if you're the type of person that just shudders at the idea of losing your gym and now you're finding yourself in this situation, you know, those adjustable dumbbells?
Yep.
Those can be a great investment for someone. Like,
for sure.
Just with those, at least you got, you should be able to do some stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, those adjustable dumbbells would be a real, you can fit them anywhere, you know? And then also I would go to a park. I mean, we make jokes about the guys who work out in the park and do all that, but they have them, you know, they're obviously training, man. Look at their fucking muscles.
No, you've got a pull-up bar, you've got dips, you've got dips, there's plenty options.
You go down to the park with a buddy, you know, if you're like me and you're not good at chin-ups, at least you do like some spotter-assisted chins. You could do all fucking different types of chins for back and biceps.
Yep.
You could do a whole bunch of chest work with push-ups, elevating your feet, doing incline push-ups.
Yep.
You know, narrow grip tricep stuff. There's all sorts of shit you could try to do. As far as legs go, I remember I had this, I had a coach a long time ago, and he wrote like a circuit, body weight circuit for quads.
Right.
And he wrote it up as like a pump finisher or like an emergency leg workout. You know what I mean? Right. And it was like, because he was always, you know, he was kind of on the early cusp of like internet coaching and stuff. So, you know, he was writing ebooks and shit. And he was, you know, really knowledgeable. But he had this thing called the quad blast. And it was, I mean, I might fuck it up, but I think it was like 20 or 30 just fast bodyweight squats, full depth.
Right.
Supersetted with, then you lunge 20 or 30 legs each side, 20 reps each leg. Bodyweight lunge. Then you do jump squats.
Right. So you get an explosive fast twitch.
Actually coming off the ground, 20 or 30 reps nonstop. And then you go into a lunge, but you do some split jumps, like boom, boom.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you try to do like 10 or 20 of those each foot. And it's sort of like almost like a HIIT cardio massive leg overload.
Yeah, the pump would be fucking terrible.
Yeah, so you get like a 250-pound guy doing it, and he's just sucking gas like a fucking Cadillac at the end, and his quads are swollen with blood, because I've done it like a bunch of times.
Right.
And I mean, like, fuck, you could hit like the quad blast. You know, your neighbors are like, here, you're jumping around upstairs. What the fuck's going on? But you could do the quad blast. It's just basically like a four-exercise giant set.
Yep.
And then he even had one where the last exercise, instead of the split jumps, if you weren't good at those, like if you were worried about getting hurt or had an injury.
Or getting split squats or.
Yeah, like there was one where you would elevate like a bench, like a high bench, and go into a push-up position with your feet on it.
Right.
So you're like off the bench, but do leg extensions.
Right, with your body essentially, yep.
So you kind of get your feet hooked, and it's like body weight leg extensions to finish the quads. So like there's some stuff we can do, you know, get inventive if you have to, but you know, you get your legs pumped up and swollen with just your body weight, and you know, at least you're not going to shrink.
Well, I think at some point if you're someone who really uses the exercise also for the mental side of it and the endorphins and everything else, just do something, you know, and sometimes it's cool. Like I've got a guy who's in the financial market that is obviously getting his ass kicked currently, and you know, everything is stressed to him, and we of course run a progressive overload, and I said, hey, I want you to just go to the gym and like have fun for a couple weeks, because he trains hard no matter what. I'm like, so if you see that thing you've been seeing, do it, and you want to do one leg on that because you haven't, do it. And it was funny, but after about 4 days he was like, this is good, something in my life that I just wing it. Because the problem was he wasn't going to beat his numbers. He's not sleeping enough. He's not eating enough. He's not hydrating enough. So gym was becoming a stressor, actually. Because then he's going in there and he's losing. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
now the mentality is different and he's enjoying it. So yeah, I say if you are in that position, just do something. You know, it's really not that complicated. You know how the body moves. Think.
I got some new ones here because I hit reset.
Oh, shit. Fire away. We got a little time.
If you have to buy a $100,000 vehicle, like you have $100,000 to buy one vehicle, that's the only vehicle you're going to be able to drive, daily driver, groceries, everything, you got to live with it. What do you buy?
And I don't care about anything else like gas or.
Well, maybe you do. Maybe you do.
Right? Okay. Okay. You know, I'm adding things to his storyline because I have to.
Can't just keep it simple, can you, Dusty?
I can't because I got to worry about the car breaking. I'm like, well, what if it? Like, he's like, I'm not going to warranty. Buy, yeah. Well, if I buy a BMW, I mean, I'm fucked at $50,000. I know all about this. I've bought many of them. Right. You know, oh man, I'm gonna, and it's only 100. That's tricky because 100 is a funny line in cars too, because it's more than I need for some, and not enough for others. Let's see.
Yeah, I wouldn't even spend the whole thing.
Yeah, if I don't have to spend the whole thing, I would probably literally drive what I have. I chose my car because it's sensible. It drives.
What exactly do you have? Like what year and everything?
I have a 2019 RX with a 350F, which is Lexus. It's just a little, it's like a crossover SUV thingy. Okay. You know, I call it a mom wagon because it legit, it just drives well. It doesn't look like ultra fancy. It has every bell and whistle. I can turn it on with my phone and
right.
You know, all that kind of shit.
When did you get rid of the
4Runner? Beast?
Yeah, the 4Runner.
The 4Runner 1 year ago when I bought this, because I bought.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, that car got bumped into, and so right. it was damaged to me. Right. So when I fixed it, I actually had one of these as a rental car.
Right. I remember
it
that.
It drove so fucking awesome, and I was like...
remember you were conflicted. You were conflicted.
Yeah, well, because I still love my other car, but the only... You know what I had a problem with what it was? It was a V6. And, dude, I love the 4Runner, but when you pull out in traffic and gun it, you're getting hit. When you're stopping. Right. It's got no balls.
Right.
So, yeah, no, I would probably get this. I mean, because this truck would last forever. I'm a child, so I'll have it for 2 years. But, yeah, that's what I would get again. Same car. Okay. And I'd have 40 grand left over. Take one for lunch.
Yeah.
I'd probably get 60.
I'd probably get an SRT Grand Cherokee.
There you go.
I still think those are my favorite.
Oh, they're awesome looking.
They're awesome looking. I have had nothing but great experiences with Jeep and Chrysler. I've had a Dodge car, a Chrysler car, and two Jeeps, and all of them were just soldiers.
What is your car? How many miles do yours have on it?
Oh, well, I've got almost 200,000 kilometers, which is like, sorry?
I don't know what it means.
Oh, it's over 100,000. It's over 100,000 miles.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like 120,000 miles, I think, or something like that.
Okay, yeah. I don't know. But, you know, this ain't grams, dude, so I don't know what the fuck. I'm like, ah, shit.
Yeah.
I feel like the quarter pounder with cheese, you know, the metric system. What the fuck that is?
It's 1.6. Okay. Times it by 1.6. So yeah, right. but a mile is a long. It's like 1.6 kilometers, I think, is what it is. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
But yeah, it's I've just they've all just I drove the Dodge car and one of the Jeeps. I just drove them to their deaths, and they just marched bravely right into the archers, like just fucking. No minus 40, just fire up without even plugging them in. You know, you understand the plugging in a car concept, right?
Oh, yeah.
The whole, yeah, you lived, you lived
hockey,
in,
so we're
yeah,
good.
Played hockey. Yeah. I'm talking to someone who's snow literate. So yeah, you know, just awesome vehicles, you know, where you're driving them long distances full of everything you own. You're like on the move and this vehicle just does
it's
you
fine.
Right.
You know,
yeah, you
fine.
Get through the mountain pass and you get through the other side and people look at your car and go, you came here in that like,
yeah. Well, see, but that's how it should be, though, because if not, you're like me with that stupid 7 Series I had that was always broken on the side of the road. I'm like, I feel like such an asshole in a $100,000 car that's broken. If I have a $2,000 car, it's broken. People are like, wow, it's a piece of shit. Of course it's broken.
You know, here's a question for you, because I've got like one of my best friends. He does really well. You know what I mean? He's got a lot of money. So he grew up tough and, you know, not poor, but he grew up like blue collar, tough, had to work, you know, hard work and grinder. And I remember having the talk with him when we were younger, like if I ever have kids, man, they're going to drive fucking shitty cars because they got to learn like to appreciate their vehicle. And you got to learn like. You can't be the most fashionable person and you can't get caught up in that at an early age. And I'm not going to spoil my kids and I'm not going to, you know, those fucking rich kids, you know, that get a, you know, brand new this for their 16th birthday. That's just ridiculous. But then he grew up like a lot of my other friends and has a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And his kids are turning that age and he's buying them brand new cars.
Right.
Because they're worried about safety, airbags, collision resistance, roadside assistance, GPS, like they want, you know what I mean? So it's an interesting, like, I think to what I drove around in, I had a Volkswagen Beetle and a couple of Ford Rangers and there was a little bit of just lottery that I was going to get where I was going. Right. You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean.
And, you know, back in those days, no cell phones or nothing. So when I leave in that $1,000 Ford Ranger, when I leave the farm in that and I disappear for the entire day of Saturday and all evening.
Yeah.
No one knows where I am, side of the road, side of the highway, you know.
You didn't have a cell phone then. So.
No cell phone, no airbags, fucking friend riding in the box. You know?
Yep, for sure.
You got two guys in the front, and then you got one of their girlfriends in the middle with no seatbelt.
Right. She's got a seat. What the fuck else does she want?
You know, so you're just like, you wonder, you're like, I see where he would be coming from, though. He's like, those are my kids. They're going to get hit by some crazy drunk driver. I want him to be in, like, a car that has airbags everywhere.
Plus, dude, you got to remember, like, I mean, and this is off subject, sort of, but the world is different than it was when we were there, too. Like, you know, when I was 16, now, granted, I was driving a brand new car, but I got in my car and drove from Arizona to Utah to go play hockey.
Yeah. See ya.
Because you could do that. I mean, granted, I wasn't a typical 16-year-old, but I mean, now things are different. I mean, like, you can't just let your kids, like, roam the streets. Their fucking neighbor's some psychopath or, you know what I mean? Like, it's really fucked up because I have friends with kids and you hear shit and you're like, you know, and I'm sick. I look stuff up all the time. And you hear about, oh, this kid disappeared. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, the neighbor, you know, the kid is found and then the neighbor commits suicide. And you're like, what the fuck, man? I used to take off on a bicycle and just disappear for the day. And my mom was like, not even worried. Like, yeah, it's fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I totally get what he does. And I also think if you do it correctly, it can be a good play.
Right.
So
right.
I don't know if I told you this, but so when I was 16, I had a brand new truck. I had a motorcycle and I had a 66 Mustang, all three. So like my car troubles were deciding which one to drive every day.
Right.
And I didn't have no job. I had a credit card, do my thing. I moved away. So I took my truck, lived gone, and all I had to do was swipe the card when I needed shit. Don't worry about it. It's fine. So then literally on my 18th birthday, my dad called me up and he was like, hey, happy birthday. I was like, oh, cool. He goes, I put $1,000 in an account for you. I was like, oh, all right. Awesome. Thanks. And he goes, your cards don't work anymore. You're off my payroll. By the way, which of the vehicles do you want? What? He goes, you can have one of them. And I'm frozen. I'm like, what is happening? Mom, that's fucked in the head. Like, I was so confused. And he was like, he goes, I showed you the good life. Now go get it. And he took everything back.
Oh, wow.
And so I had $1,000. I'd never had a job. And I found out gas wasn't free. And that sucked. And that was that. So it was like one of those things where for me, that worked out because I wanted to get back to that fucking life because being poor sucked.
Yeah.
You know, oh, that's but all of a sudden, funny, you're literally, yeah. So I was, next thing you know, it's like, we can't like get cheese and the fries. It's fucking out of control. Easy, kids. This money's going down.
Are refills free here? Yeah. That's funny. I didn't know that story. That's a good one.
Yeah, it was not a good one. That was a terrible fucking birthday.
Damn. So what are your plans for the day, Dusty? Are you going to try to get a workout in somewhere?
I'm off today. I started taking Mondays off because we do this. So Mondays are off, but I am going to brave Costco. Okay. The good news is I don't need anything wacky.
Yeah.
I need egg whites.
Yeah.
And I feel like egg whites are that thing that no one's rushing to go collect a bunch of egg whites. So I think I'm going to get in and get out and be fine.
I got the last couple of egg whites last night. I went just to see if there was something I should grab. And I thought, well, there's only two left. I should fucking get them.
Yeah, I'm going to get really stoned before I go.
Oh, that'll help.
For sure. Yeah. And then that way, when I'm there, I can just stand in line, which will probably be in the parking lot, and then just wait.
You know, I have to admit, I had a weird incident last night. I just sort of make decisions when it comes to my body, how I want to look. You know, like, we've been bodybuilding for so long that if I just want to get leaner, I just make the decision. I'm going to eat this way. It's not like I, you know what I mean? I was always such a good dieter, so strict, my brain just turns off. But last night, I, like Emily said, she had to run to Safeway to grab something. I thought, well, I better come and just see if there's something, like, you know, see what the grocery store looks like. I was almost just curious. You're
curious.
Because I'd gone like 2 days before and bought a lot of food, right?
Right.
So I thought I'll grab something, you know, restock a few things. And it was funny because I found myself, I was like, well, you know, we're in a crisis here. I should just like get a bunch of fun food.
Doritos.
Yeah, I should. I don't never buy Doritos. I should get a bag of Doritos. Maybe I'll eat those just for fun, you know, because it's locked down and all that, you know. And I was like contemplating buying all this junk. And then I was like, wait a minute. These shreds don't stop for Armageddon.
His new shirt. I just saw that on a t-shirt.
You just saw that? These shreds don't stop for Armageddon.
You just created a shirt in my mind. That was amazing.
It was funny. It was almost, I felt almost like a little bit like more like a normal person, how they make excuses for everything. Right. Yeah. I go, well, it was Susie's birthday, so I had a piece of cake. Was it your fucking birthday?
And even if it was, what the fuck does that have to do with it? That's why I laughed. I'm like, what, you're gonna like buy Doritos? What the fuck's going on?
You know, and then I just thought of that call that the client gives you. Like, I cheated on my diet yesterday, you know, like with all the stuff going on.
I'm like, and that made you eat?
What do you mean? That your gym was still open yesterday.
But gym was still open. You still have all your food. Wait, what's happening?
What do you mean with all that's happening?
I totally get that. That's why, like, even today when I went before and just got some salmon, only thing that happened in my head is I was like, God, I hope nobody thinks I'm stocking up. This is just how much I eat.
Right.
I felt a little guilty. I was like, I'm not one of you. I actually eat a pound of salmon every day.
When I went through the till the other day, I had like 10 packs of turkey and a bunch of fish and like 10 egg whites. And I had a big fucking bag of ass wipe. And that's just because we're actually down to like 4 rolls. And I thought, fuck, I better grab this giant bag of shit paper because
I don't have none.
Well, we're down to 4 rolls. It's not like we have 20 rolls already. Yeah. So it was just so funny because it was actually just kind of what I would normally buy with a few extra packs, like, so right, in case they run out Thursday or something, you know?
Yeah.
And the girl at the counter is like, oh, you're ready. I'm like, I'm ready for the weekend.
Yeah, like, actually, so fuck me if you guys would have more by Thursday.
If you guys
so,
don't have by the middle of the week, I'm going to be hurting.
No, that's so true. That's literally what I thought. I was like, but then I realized when I was in line and people's like carts were exploding, I had one of those hand carriers.
Yeah.
I was like, we're fine. I'm not one of you. Okay. All right, boss.
Wrap it up, Dusty. I guess.
That's it. If there is a next week, we'll be back.
Yeah. And maybe we get an Armageddon related guest. That'd be fun. Hey,
it'd be fun for sure.
I got to remind everyone, hey, it's a good time to buy some stuff online at Mutant and use our codes.
For sure. You should buy protein, people, because we have plenty.
We have plenty of protein. Stock up on protein. You're going to need it. So use our codes. Mine is BigRon20. What's yours?
Just Dusty20.
Dusty20.
Dusty20. Just remember, guys, if you want, like, if you want to get the 20% off on great useless information, that's Ron. If you want pure humor, then you order mine. It just depends on which protein you're after.
Come on now.
He's still broken about that comment. I'm going to use it forever.
I like to think I have a smart, intelligent humor that maybe fewer people appreciate.
But you know what it is? It's because it's up here. You know?
Oh, is that what it is? It's cerebral.
I hang out the shallow end of the pool, so it's just so much easier for people to get it.
There's so many people there.
Look at all of us together.
Most shark attacks happen in shallow water. That's because that's where all the people are. Okay.
Oh, shit. All right, boss. Okay,
have a good one, Dusty. Remember, it's just bodybuilding.